Okay, this is the 25th Derech Hashem class, and we are in the second section, chapter 3, paragraphs 11 and 12. I think we actually are going to finish it this time. So let's just review. Last time we talked a lot about reincarnation, so I just wanted to open and see if you have any questions before we go on kind of from that subject or anything that you reflected on that you want to wonder about.
No, I'm pretty good on reincarnation.
Okay. Okay, so just a quick thought review is just that reincarnation is for, it is a general accepted Jewish principle, not accepted by every stream, but relatively accepted today. And basically the idea is not that everybody automatically gets reincarnated, but that there is reincarnation for when you deserve it and when you need it, both at the same time. And that many of us today are reincarnations finishing off projects, whatever they are. Okay, so if that's that basic thought. And so now it's coming up with paragraphs 11 and 12 to wrap up the discussion of individual providence. So looking in the text first, so it says, from this entire discussion, we see that there are many different and varied reasons for everything that happens to an individual in this world, whether it is good or otherwise. It is important to realize, however, that this does not mean that every event is always the result of all these causes. These are merely all the possible causes, but things can sometimes result from one and sometimes from another. So I tried to make a list. I went back through the previous sections and I made a list of reasons why things happen, because he doesn't review them here. He just says from this entire discussion we can see that there are many different reasons. So here's what I came up with. So the first reason that was discussed for why different things happen to people, why there's hashgacha pratis, is so that we have points from which to choose, so that we're all put into different situations. And I think we talked about Rav Dessler and how Rav Dessler explains that we're all created as individuals, completely different one from another, so that we have the opportunity to create a completely different connection with Hashem, so that we have the opportunity to be the first and the best at our own personal connection, that we can achieve more than anybody else in our personal realm. So points from which to choose would be part of that. Each one of us has to then be created with an array of points, so that we can choose ourselves and move ourselves in different directions. So the first point of Hashgacha Pratis would be setting up our own individual situations so that we have our own individual orbit in which to function so that we can create our own individual relationship with Hashem. That's number one. Number two is the different roles that we have to play. That if you think there's many different mashals used, an orchestra or a king's court or you know, all the different people who work in for a city government, whatever it is, every single person has their own individual role to play. So they would be set up in their role, set up with what they need to play their role. So different things might happen to a person to help facilitate that role. The third reason is the spiritual roots of each person, that a person comes from a particular spiritual place, and that place dictates certain things that one has to engage in to go along with the spiritual root, or to bring out the spiritual root, to help develop the spiritual root of each person. So that could be another reason why certain things, good and otherwise, happen to a person. A fourth reason is challenge, to be presented with challenges, to grow through, so to kind of create an obstacle course through which one may exercise themselves, so to present those particular and unique challenges for each person. Reason number five is justice and recompense. That the world is set up so that there is justice, so that what one does will trigger certain responses in the world that will then manifest as realities in a person's life. So justice and recompense can both be on the negative and on the positive side, and that concept is captured in two phrases. In Hebrew, the first one is Haba l'taher misa'in lo, the one who comes to purify himself or herself, misa'in lo, is assisted, that he's helped. or Habala Tame Potchim Lo. The one who comes to become Tame, Potchim Lo, doors are opened for him. And we talked about also the difference between those two phrases. One is Misa'in Lo and one is Potchim Lo. So the one who comes L'taher, the one who comes for good, he's actually assisted. The one who comes for bad, he's the negative is made open to him, but he's not necessarily assisted in achieving it. But then it went on further, the text went on further to discuss different amounts of help and different amounts of roadblocks that would be put in somebody's path in order to achieve their goal, whether their goal is positive or negative, but that the hashgacha would place roadblocks or assistance packages, let's say, in the path of a person to help them achieve good or its opposite. Then the next reason is suffering. People might suffer for different reasons. One primary reason for suffering is that it is a push for somebody to do tshuva or to make a cheshbon ha-nefesh, to examine themselves. Or suffering could then become a punishment in case one does not do tshuva. So as we've said before, there are three major ways to remove negativity from oneself after one has incorporated it into themselves or heaped it upon themselves. The first way to remove it is tshuva. The second way, so that's the proactive, positive way to remove it. The second way, which is the passive way to have it removed, is suffering. And the third way, which is also passive, but certainly very engaging to have it removed, is Gehenna. And that's on the other side. So we have tshuva and suffering in this world, or Gehenna in the next. All three of them remove negativity that we've brought upon ourselves. Then the next reason for why things might happen is because there are certain situations that can either be caused by others or are set up for others. So we talked about, let's say, when somebody inherits wealth, right? The parents need to be wealthy, so the child gets the benefit of that, not necessarily that they earned the wealth or that they earned the spiritual position to handle so much money, but that the parents needed it, and so therefore the child who's in their orbit will receive it. Or the opposite, the child needs to be wealthy. But in order for the child to be wealthy, the parents have to first inherit it or first earn it or first whatever it is. So it's possible that a person's business dealings might be successful or the opposite for the sake of their children and not necessarily for their own selves.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so that's where the situation might be caused by others or created for others. And lastly, we have the suffering of tzaddikim, which isn't really last, second to last, is the suffering of tzaddikim. So we talked about that at length, the concept of a ravus, of being connected one to another, that one person might suffer and consciously receive that suffering upon them, or even sometimes unconsciously be able to handle greater suffering. And so they're able to handle it, let's say, sometimes for another, or for a town, or even possibly for a whole generation, that one person might be able to, through their own suffering, dissipate the need for others to suffer to that extent. Let's say, for instance, I don't know for sure, but I heard that in the Holocaust, it was the first time that Jews were not given the option to convert or die. That before that, they were given the option. This is the first time that they weren't. And that one reason why they weren't as a policy of the Third Reich was because they might have failed, right? Maybe too many Jews would have chosen the conversion option or the reject Judaism option, so it wasn't
mm-hmm.
offered to them.
Interesting point.
Right? So it's possible, though, that in certain generations that a tzaddik might have been able to take on certain amounts of suffering so that others didn't have to. Whatever it was, a pogrom wouldn't come to a town because a certain tzaddik could experience something, or possibly even the suffering of whoever suffered in the Holocaust might have shifted certain amounts of other things that had to happen for other people, even in other generations. And which brings us to the reincarnation aspect also. Well, that ties into both the suffering and into the reincarnation and into situation caused by others or made for others, where certain people might have achieved positions so that others could suffer more greatly, or where certain people fell from positions so that other people would suffer less, let's say. But it all connects together, and then reincarnation ties in too, because who knows, you know, what generation a person lived through or needs to be set up for. In the multiple incarnations that they are. So those are the different reasons that I was able to tease apart and list from this chapter 3, which brings us back to, now we can understand that paragraph in the beginning of 11, that from this entire discussion we see that there are many different and varied reasons for everything that happens to an individual in this world. But these are just the possible causes, and you never know what is causing what. So we'll just continue inside the text. The highest wisdom, however, perceives and knows what is best to rectify all creation. In its profound design, it weighs everything together and directs each individual element of creation accordingly. Although creation is arranged to follow a cause and effect relationship, every cause does not always necessarily have the same effect. Many causes are almost always involved, and in many cases, one will contradict the other. Thus, for example, the merit of one's parents may entitle an individual to wealth and prosperity. His own deeds, on the other hand, may require that he be poor. His place in the general scheme may further exert an influence in determining whether he is granted wealth or made poor. So there could be many, many factors at work, and some contradict each other, and the highest wisdom understands how to arrange it all and what to grant to whom in order to bring out the best results. So we can't make that cheshbon, and we need to be careful not to make the cheshbon. It can be risky sometimes when we learn, you know, all these different things, for us to look at somebody, and usually we're evolved enough to not judge when we look at somebody else. But we might be tempted to judge when we look at ourselves. Just be very careful to know that even though we know a list of reasons of why things might happen, doesn't mean we know the reason for why that thing happened.
Yeah.
So we could wonder, and we certainly should do introspection and see if we can do some tshuva when negative things happen, or use the positive things for extra growth. But we don't know for sure why what happened. So we just want to keep ourselves in a posture of serving Hashem, trying to figure out his will and do it, and understand that he runs the world, and he's smarter than us. For my own self, I sometimes catch myself in davening. Sometimes I'll ask Hashem for something specific. I don't know, like, for instance, I might ask for, you know, a certain child to, let's say, for a certain person to conceive. Right? And then I might add in, you know, please let whatever fertility treatments they're going through work. And I have to stop myself there, and I remind myself, wait a second, I want them to have kids, right? So that's what I'm davening for. Hashem's smarter than me. He knows how to make it work. I don't have to, like, clue him in that they're going in for fertility treatments or whatever it is, and please make that work. You know, he could make their own plumbing work without the need for fertility treatments or whatever, however, right? I just want them to have kids. So I sometimes pull back and just remind myself, Hashem knows how to make it all work. Just ask for what you want and let him figure out how to get it there. So, okay. So, let's see. Right. So, let's just finish this last paragraph because that's important. I like the way he writes this. The details of this judgment, however, are beyond the grasp of man's understanding. But to know its general concepts and categories is to know much, as we have explained earlier. So I like that. But we don't know, but knowing even what we do know, it's very helpful. Okay, so paragraph 12. One must also realize that things can happen to an individual both as an end in themselves and as a means toward something else. Thus, when it is appropriate that something happen to an individual as a result of one of the above causes, then it is said to be an end in itself. Other things may happen to an individual, however, which are merely a means to ultimately achieve some other end completely. With regard to such means, the prophet said in Yeshayahu, I will thank you, Hashem, though you showed me anger. Our sages explain that this refers to a situation where someone's cow broke its foot and fell, and as a result, he found a buried treasure. They also apply it to a case where one escapes from a calamity as a result of something that he may have initially considered a grave inconvenience. The example is given of that. The example given is that of a person who wanted to embark on an ocean voyage and was detained and missed his ship. The ship then sank. I heard a talk from Rabbi Israel Tauber, who missed the plane, and he sat sulking in the airport. And he can't believe he missed the flight. And he was working on himself. He said, oh, it must be the Ratzon Hashem, and he missed the flight. Maybe the plane is going to crash and his life is saved. And then he sat there in the airport and he said, I need the plane to crash and everybody on it should die so that I can justify why I missed my flight.
Oh, wow.
You know, he said, Hashem, please help that plane reach its destination and everybody should be healthy. And there's got to be a reason. I don't know the reason why I missed my flight, but... that plane should land safely.
Yeah.
Right. It doesn't have to be that the boat will sink or the plane will crash and that's why we missed it. There could be another reason. Maybe we need to sit next to the person in the next plane that we're going to catch. You know, that person, even if we don't chat with them, that person needed to see us say Tzila Sederach. Whatever it is. Could be small. It could be big. But Hashem arranges the world. Means such as these can be destined to affect the individual himself or to influence others. Something can thus happen to a person in order to bring good or evil to someone else. The highest wisdom, however, determines what should befall each individual, and in the same manner determines the means through which this should come about. Everything is ultimately decreed with the utmost precision according to what is truly best. So I'll just give you an interesting example from Portland, where I'm visiting now. Who knows how Hashem arranges the world? But so I wanted to visit with somebody in Portland who was setting up a new school. So it turns out that today she had an appointment with the head of a Christian school that charges very low tuition, and they cover 98% of their school's expenses through the tuition. So she wanted to go see that school and how they run it, learn from them what they do, so that she can try to figure out a principle that she could apply to running a Jewish school with low tuition and cover the expenses.
Mm-hmm.
So that school agreed to meet, and she asked if she could bring along her out-of-town consultant who was visiting, so I got to come along for that meeting. But they had also asked, as long as you're here in our school, would you be willing to address our senior class, our senior apologetics class? High school kids who are learning to defend their faith. So it is a Christian school, and part of their curriculum is learning how to engage in discussion and arguments with others about mm-hmm. the veracity of their version of Christianity. And so that class, the principal wanted that class to be able to ask questions of an Orthodox Jew. So we went and we answered questions. You know, that's kind of fair. If you're going to get information from them, you should do a service for them too. So we went and answered some questions. But it was interesting. One of the questions that one of the kids asked was, the Rebbetzin that I went with said something about how we all can work. It was a question about the afterlife and how we can all work to achieve our own afterlife, that God doesn't just hand it to us, that it's dependent on our own efforts. And each one of us can achieve our own, you know, relationship with Hashem through our own efforts. It wouldn't be fair if each person experienced the same thing. Each person works and each person experiences what they achieved. Otherwise, if each person was just given a handout by Hashem, that would be the bread of shame, which is a Jewish expression, right? The bread of shame. So one of the kids raised his hand and said, yes, but what if you believe that because of original sin, you are incapable of baking a loaf of bread? You're a blind beggar by the side of the road and hungry. And wouldn't it just be better if somebody came along and in their kindness they gave you a shining loaf of bread for you to eat? Wouldn't that be better than that person saying, go bake your own loaf of bread? So just because I knew a little bit more about Christian theology than she did, I heard the question differently than she did. So I was able to point out to that high school senior that that is a place where our theology completely diverges from Christianity. So we talked about that a little bit. But who knows what that will bring about in that class, that those kids heard whatever explanation I gave them as to a key difference in Christian theology and Jewish theology, that we don't believe that people are tainted by sin and incapable of accomplishing their own life and can only use grace. And Christians believe that they are tainted by sin to the extent that they can't accomplish anything on their own. And so that is a point of serious divergence between us. So who knows if the establishment of a Jewish school in Portland and its need to work on tuition and pricing was something that planted a seed in one of those kids in that class to reconsider their God concept and how they're in a relationship with God in the afterlife.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who knows what causes what, you know? But that's what this is saying. Everything is ultimately decreed with the utmost precision according to what is truly best. So who knows if a teacher needed to hear that, or if a kid needed to hear that, or even if the Rebbetzin that I was with needed to learn that point of divergence between Christian and Jewish theology.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that wouldn't have come about if the school wasn't being established and if they weren't trying to figure out how to make it affordable.
Right.
So all kinds of things, you know, Hashem sets up the world. Okay, we are ready to begin chapter 4.
All right.
Okay, so this chapter is on Israel and the nations and the difference between the two. So we've discussed a little bit before about the way Jews became differentiated, but we'll let the Ramchal explain for himself these concepts. But it's pretty fascinating. Okay, one of the deepest concepts of God's providence involves Israel and the other nations. With regard to their basic human characteristics, the two appear exactly alike. From the Torah's viewpoint, however, the two are completely different and are treated as if they belonged to completely different species. We will now delve into this concept, explaining in which way the two are alike as well as in which way they are different. So we know that we have a hierarchy in the world of the different levels of things that exist. So it starts with a domain, inanimate, tzomeach, flowering or blossoming, that's plant life, chai, that's things that are alive, animals, things that are alive and move. After chai comes medaber, speaking, that's human beings. And after medaber comes Yisrael, Jews. So the Torah does see that those levels puts Jews in a different level of category than regular human beings. And so spiritually, they're different species, but physically, they do appear the same. So the question is, how did we get from all of us descended from Adam and Eve, Adam and Chava, to today when we are spiritually completely different species? So that's what this chapter is going to explain. Before Adam sinned, he was on a much higher level than contemporary man, as discussed earlier in 1:3:6. In that state, man is on a very lofty level, fit for a high degree of eternal excellence. If he had not sinned, man would have simply been able to elevate and perfect himself step by step. He would have then given birth to future generations while still in that state of excellence. Their number would be accurately determined by God's wisdom, depending on how those enjoying his good should best be perfected. All these future generations would have then shared this good with Adam. God had also determined and decreed that all these generations that would have been born of Adam should exist on various determined levels. Some generations would thus be primary, while others would be secondary, like roots and branches. Later generations would stem from the earlier ones and share their characteristics, like branches stemming from a tree. The number of trees and branches, however, was determined from the very beginning with the utmost precision. When Adam sinned, he fell from his original high level and brought upon himself a great degree of darkness and insensitivity, as discussed earlier. Mankind in general also fell from its original height and remained on a degraded level where it was not at all worthy of the eternal high degree of excellence originally destined for it. Let's just check here because I do want to hang on a second. Okay, I'll read one more paragraph. Man could thus anticipate only a very much lower level, and it was in this state that children were born into the world. They were therefore all born into this degraded state. Okay, so I just mentioned in the previous chapter something about the difference between Jewish and Christian theology on this point, but I do think it's important for us to understand that, and certainly as Makarios to understand this. This is a point of significant difference between Christians and Jews altogether. So, first of all, for those of you listening by recording who aren't aware, there is no such thing as Christian theology, is in terms of a one type of theology. There's many different types of Christians and Christian groups, and many of them believe wildly divergent things, so much so that it's almost like different religions, but it is all united in a thread of basically being basically monotheistic, of basically having a concept of a divine Messiah and Redeemer, so the redemption plan through their concept of Messiah, which is completely different than our concept of Messiah. Anyway, part of the divergence is right here. Both Christians and Jews agree that that there was a fall from the original state that mankind is supposed to be on, and that that fall from that original state of elevation caused to the expulsion from Gan Eden. So that's basically the biblical account. Right? There's Adam, there's Chava, created by Hashem. They didn't do what Hashem said, and out from the garden they go. Right? And so now Plan B starts in the world, where now the world is run differently because of the initial sin that they did. So, but the question is, what was the result of that? So this is what we Jews believe, well, of course, what we're learning right now. But just parenthetically, so that you know, because sometimes when we use similar words, people think we're referring to similar accounts, and we're not. So my understanding is that most Christians, maybe not all, but in general, that one of the themes that unites Christian theology is this concept that the initial fall, that initial sin, brought mankind, again, this is Christian theology, brought mankind to a place where they were incapable of accomplishing a relationship with God at all whatsoever, that they couldn't do it on their own and therefore needed Yashka to come into the world and rescue them from their fallen state and allow them to connect to God through him. So that's a principle of Christian theology that most Christians share. But the Jewish concept, which is what we want to focus on, but I do think, as Makarios, it's important to understand, not the same thing. When we talk about a fall from the beginning, we're not talking about the same thing, although it's from the same point.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened here was Adam and Chava were created. They were on a very high level, and when they did that first Avera, they fell from that original height to a very degraded level where everything was completely changed. So I think we discussed before, but it's just worth saying again, when Adam and Chava were first created, they were probably bodies of light, or with an aleph, which is still physical, but the lightest of physicality. And after the sin, and before the sin, the way that we were supposed to be is that our physicality was so connected to our spirituality that our physical appearance was a direct reflection of our spiritual state. so that you could look at somebody and see exactly where they were holding spiritually, because the physical and the spiritual were so connected one to another. As soon as that first sin occurred, it completely changed the nature of all physicality. And one of the things that happened was that the way that the physical was expressed, the way that one, the physical reality of the people who committed that sin was, became so embarrassing because it reflected such a sin that that's what needed to be covered. It wasn't necessarily their nakedness, meaning a sexual nakedness that needed to be covered, but rather the nakedness of what they did, that it was so revealed. It was so uncomfortable to have that level of revelation of the low state that they dropped to, that that's what needed to be covered. And that was the chesed that Hashem did, was give them bodies, give them garments of leather to cover themselves, which is what we are now. We're bodies not of or with an aleph, but or with an ayin. Ayin, or is skin, or leather. So we, the garments that Hashem gave us are the bodies that we wear now, as opposed to the bodies that we first wore. So, but that this is a very degraded state, the state that we're in now, and this is the state that we give birth to children in, so that we dropped to this much lower level and then gave birth to children that were born in this degraded state. Is that clear so far before we continue in this paragraph?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. Nevertheless, even in the time of his downfall, the elevated aspect that existed in man as a result of his true root was not completely extinguished. Meaning, even though he dropped to that extremely degraded state, the potential of what we were and what we still could yet achieve didn't disappear. So we existed in a degraded state in parallel with the possibility of who we could be. Adam was therefore not cast aside completely and could still return to the higher level. But now he would be functioning under an important disadvantage, since he was actually on a lower plane, which merely had the potential aspect of the higher level. So we weren't functioning on the higher level, we're functioning on the lower level, but we still had the potential aspect of the higher level. God gave Adam's descendants a free choice at the time, to strengthen themselves and strive to elevate themselves from this lower state and regain the higher level. The highest wisdom determined, however, the length of time best suited for such an effort, and accordingly set a time limit for these generations. In a way, this is very much like the time limit now given to each individual. Every individual has a limited lifetime, and it is during this period of time that he must attain both perfection and his level in the community of the future world, as discussed earlier. The reason in both these cases is that everything that involves effort must be limited in time. So what this is saying is that we were created in that high state, did that sin, we dropped to this degraded state. That degraded state created a new fountain from which the world flowed, a new fountain from which human beings flowed, in a degraded fashion, so that those lower level human beings gave birth to lower level human beings, which gave birth to human beings like them. And that's what the earth is populated with right now. But Hashem didn't take away the possibility of regaining that higher level. So that possibility still existed. However, nobody lived up to that potential, they lived below it. So if you just imagine that potential riding along the top of a chart with humanity living along the bottom of the chart, but the two existing in parallel. And God's saying, okay, it's possible for you human beings who are living there down at the bottom of the chart, it's possible for you to still achieve the potential that exists above you. But I'm not going to let that possibility exist forever. It's not a 100-million-year plan. This is a limited, time-limited plan. It's a limited time offer to regain that potential. So he did cap the time that was possible to strive to achieve that just like, we're not saying what that cap is yet, but just like he capped, excuse me, the life cycle, the lifespan that each one of us has. We don't have unlimited time to try to achieve what we want to accomplish in this world. We have a limited amount of time. Could be 60 years, could be 80, could be 100, 120, whatever it is. We don't exactly know what it is, but we do know that it's limited. It's not forever. We don't have forever to accomplish what we want. We have a limited human lifespan to accomplish what we want. So too, the world has a limited time. And here it says that the reason in both these cases is that everything that involves effort must be limited in time. Yeah, I think we could do a little bit more. This is very long. So let's see. Okay, we'll start. The highest wisdom deemed it fitting that this effort be divided into a period for the roots and another for the branches. The original effort would thus be that of the roots, while what would come later would involve the branches. The human race initially had a chance to permanently regain its original state and rectify the spiritual damage that had been done. The proper procedure would have been for the roots and heads of Adam's descendants to first elevate themselves to the rectified level. Once this was accomplished, both the roots and their branches would remain in this state forever, since the branches always follow the roots. So it's talking about the first that first chunk of time in history when people were more like the roots, so there's roots and branches. And they could have, those initial human beings, those first several generations had chosen to regain that higher level, they would have brought all humanity back up to that state. But they didn't. The time provided for generations to function as roots, however, was limited. During this period, the gate was open and the opportunity existed for any individual to properly prepare himself and permanently become a good and worthy root. He would then be prepared for a high degree of excellence appropriate for man in his original state, rather than that of man in his fallen state, which is the state that we're still in as a group of all humanity. Since this individual would perfect himself as a root, he would attain this for his deserving descendants as well as for himself. They would all receive what he attained and would therefore be able to remain on the level and state attained by him or by him as their root. Okay, so do you get that so far? So there's a certain period, and my understanding, I'll see if he says it here, is that the first 2,000 years was that period.
Mm-hmm.
And if anybody during that first 2,000 years would rectify himself, he could achieve that level of heightened beginning. And then once he, as a root, attached himself to that level of potential, then he would give birth to children who were already on that level.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's continue inside. The period during which this was possible extended from the time of Adam until the generation of separation, so until the Dor HaFlaga, when the Tower of Babel was built. During this period, there never ceased to be some righteous people who preached the truth to the multitudes, warning them to correct themselves. These included such individuals as Hanoch, Mesushelach, Shem, and Aver. Okay, so he's not saying until 2000, even though, well, we'll see as we continue. Man's measure was filled, however, in the generation of separation, the Dor HaFlaga. So it's called Dor HaFlaga, the generation of separation, because that's the generation in the Tower of Babel when they actually did unite as people to build a tower to rebel against Hashem. So the fact that they united, the power of unity was so strong that they may have been successful in actually achieving their negative desire. And so the Hashgacha stepped in and said, okay, you guys want to achieve something awful, but that awful thing shouldn't be achieved. And so a roadblock will be put in your way, and that roadblock will be diverse languages. It will separate you out. You won't be able to work together. So Hashem didn't take away their desire to rebel. Hashem didn't take away their desire to unify in that effort. He just took away their ability to unify in that effort.
Mm-hmm.
So really, he allowed them to maintain their free will, meaning their will was left intact, but their ability to manifest it was not. Okay. Man's measure was filled, however, in the generation of separation. God's attribute of justice then decreed that the time when men could be considered roots should come to a close. Until this time, things could become a permanent part of these roots, depending on what had transpired previously. With the generation of separation, this period came to a close. God then scrutinized all mankind, perceiving the levels that should be made permanent in that generation's members according to their deeds. These things then became a permanent part of their nature in their aspect as roots. It was thus decreed that they should bear future generations, that they each should bear future generations, all possessing the qualities that were deemed appropriate for their root ancestor. So in that Dor HaFlaga, whatever each one had accomplished became a root quality of those nations as they became separated. The descendants of each of these individuals were thus divided into permanent groupings, each with its own characteristics and limitations. They were destined to father future generations who would inherit these characteristics, just as members of any particular species inherit the characteristics of their forebearers. According to the highest judgment, it turned out that none of them deserved to rise above the degraded level to which Adam and his children had fallen as a result of their sin. Not a single one had risen above it all. There was, however, one exception, and that was Abraham. He had succeeded in elevating himself, and as a result of his deeds, was chosen by God. Abraham was therefore permanently made into a superior, excellent tree, conforming to man's highest level. It was further provided that he would be able to produce branches and father a nation possessing his characteristics. The world was then divided into 70 nations, each with its own particular place in the general scheme. All of them, however, remained on the level of man in his fallen state, while only Israel was in the elevated state. So let's just back up for a second. So we have Adam and Chava, and then the generations that flow from them, 10 generations between Adam and Noah. And then there's the flood. The world is destroyed except and all the people on it except for Noah and his wife and his three sons and their wives, Shem, Ham, and Yafet. Then the world is repopulated through them. So we basically have three major groupings of peoples, the descendants of Shem, the descendants of Ham, and the descendants of Yafet. And then I think it's around 10 generations later, not positive, you have the Dor HaFlaga, and in that generation is where those three major groupings were differentiated further into the 70 nations. So we have this concept of 70 nations, and that's where it comes from, was that division at the time. Of course, we know that today there are more than 70 nations and more than 70 languages, but I think that 70 here is a root number, meaning the a multiplicity of the diversity. So there were 70 basic root nations or core nation types, archetypal nations and archetypal languages. And that's what was solidified at this time, was those 70. And none of them achieved, no individual and no nation achieved the higher level of the potential that was available, and that era was becoming closed, except for Abraham. Abraham, again, was not the first monotheist, but he was the first monotheist with a mission. So even though Hanoch and Meshulach and Shem and Aver and some other monotheists did try to preach the truth or warn people or help have them fix themselves up, they didn't try to teach. They weren't like Abraham, who recognized Hashem and understood that the one God reality meant that the world was created only for the good of those who were in it, that God could achieve nothing from us. and therefore created us only for us and not for him, and that it behooved us all to be in the deepest relationship possible with Hashem, and that there must be a way to enter into that relationship. And he started to explore that and teach the concept.
Mm-hmm.
It's because of that that he was chosen, right? He looked up in a way. If you imagine that chart, right, with humanity living in that degraded state on the bottom of the chart, and the potential of humanity from which we fell moving along simultaneously at the top of the chart, basically what happened was, of all humanity, only Avraham looked up and saw the potential that we could achieve and decided to strive for it, aim for that. So that's what Hashem recognized him for and shifted things because of that. So that was the Avraham exception. He was chosen by God and permanently made into a superior, excellent tree, conforming to man's highest level. However, we weren't shifted physically, but spiritually we were. So that his descendants, all of them, let's just read that paragraph again. The world was divided into 70 nations, each with its own particular place in a general scheme. All of them, however, remained on the level of man in his fallen state, while only Israel was in the elevated state. So it's not the state of perfection yet, it's just the state of the higher level.
Mm-hmm.
After this, the gate was closed to the era of roots. Things would then be directed and brought about upon individuals as branches, each one according to his nature. Let's see. I'll finish this paragraph and then mention this. Even though it may seem that man was originally the same as he is now, there's actually a great difference. Before the generation of separation, man existed in the age of roots and was dealt with accordingly. When this period ended, things were judged and made permanent, and a new age began. This is the age of branches, which still exists. So it did go from the year zero, you know, basically from when Adam and Chava made their mistake right away upon creation, until approximately the first 2,000 years, because if you remember, Abraham was born in the year 1948 from the year zero. So, and that's an easy date to remember since the state of Israel, the current modern state of Israel, was established in 1948. But in the count of 5772, Abraham was born in the year 1948. So that's 1948 is when he was born. It took a little while for him to accomplish recognizing Hashem and being chosen by Hashem and shifting himself as a root person into the kind of person that could give birth to those who would be similar to himself. So he was right in the tail end of that first 2,000 years, and that's when he shifted himself. So he was able to, still in that era, the tail end of the era of roots, become an actual spiritual root. Today, individuals can still have free will and can still themselves shift themselves, but they can't necessarily, by their own personal shift all their descendants, whereas Avraham could. That's the difference between being a root and a branch. They were branches, they were the roots. So that's what this is saying here, is that it seems like we're the same. And if you dig up a body from that time, you'll see they look just like us. But the difference is that they were foundational people. They were roots of nations, roots of trends, the deeper insides of seeds of what would flow from them, whereas we are already the branches. And it's interesting, he talks about the, well, I'll wait until we get to that, where we are the branches and we can't cause the same effect with our choices and behaviors that the people with root characteristics could cause.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we'll end there. This is the age of branches that we're still in, and we'll pick up, I guess not next week because it's Shavuot.
Right.
Right. Shavuot, where, I mean, it's interesting because in this chapter we're going to learn about conversion, how a non-Jew can become Jewish. that's just interesting to see that is one of the principles of our faith also, is that that is possible, that each human being is master of their own destiny. And every human being can make a choice to join the Jewish people, should they so choose, and as a branch can tear themselves off from the nation to which they belong and grasp themselves on to the tree of the Jewish people and become fully blended and depart, and then hopefully when the blend becomes complete, be have the life running through them that allows them to give birth to Jews also. So we'll see that in future chapters, but I just want to mention that, give you the heads up, because we're coming up on Shavuot, where we read a book of a Gioret, just to tell us that Mashiach comes from that, that really the concept of the redemption of the world, or the leader of that redemption, has his roots in the choice of a human being to join. Really, the whole Judaism has its roots in the choice of Abraham to shift, but Mashiach has his roots in the choice of a woman to join the Jewish people, so that we are all masters of our own destiny. It's all dependent on our free will. So that's really the message of Shavuot, receiving the Torah, that the Torah is just the book on how to use your free will to connect with Hashem in the deepest way possible. And even if you're not born Jewish, you could still make that choice to connect to Hashem in the deepest way possible by joining the Jewish people and keeping the Torah. So I wish you a happy Shavuot, and Bezrat Hashem will reconvene in 2 weeks.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. And I'll talk to you soon.
Okay, take care.
Okay, all right. Bye-bye.